and welcome to the Sunday edition of the Big Red Bench. It is Sarah Mackenzie Foley here with you until 7pm. A big thanks to Sinead Quinlan for keeping us all company since 2 o'clock this afternoon. I've got a packed show for you this evening, including reaction from Cork's win against Offaly in the All-Ireland Senior Hurling Championship yesterday. I'll also speak to Alan Quinlan about Munster's URC semi-final loss, plus we've got interviews with Nicola Tuttle and Callum Walsh, so let's get into it. Starting with Gaelic games in the Red FM Hurling League Division 1, there were two games down for decision earlier today. Blackrock won their match against Charleville on a scoreline of 122-213. Meanwhile, Father O'Neill suffered a loss to Sarsfields with the full-time score in that game, Father O'Neill's 112 to Sarsfields 321. The Euros are continuing from Germany, where the Netherlands have started their campaign with a 2-1 win against Poland. Poland took an early lead, which was later cancelled out by two Dutch goals. It's half-time in the second game of the day between Slovenia and Denmark, where Danish captain Christian Eriksen has put his team 1-0 up. It's a landmark moment for Eriksen, who suffered cardiac arrest during his last appearance at the tournament in 2021. At 8 o'clock, England will get their Euros campaign underway in the final game of the day against Serbia. Finally in golf, Rory McIlroy is in a good position as he attempts to end his major drought. The former world number one is 3 shots off the lead heading into the final round of the US Open this evening. He'll tee off from 4 under par in a tie for second just after 7pm Irish time, with Bryson DeChambeau leading on 7 under. Shane Lowry is 2 under through 6 holes today and is up to 3 over par, with Tom McKibben now back on 8 over par. We're going to start off the show this evening by taking a look back at Cork's win against Offaly in that preliminary quarterfinal of the All-Ireland Senior Hurling Championship yesterday, which has set up another clash with Dublin for the Rebels. First up, we've got Off the Ball's Tommy Rooney, who spoke to Cork boss Pat Ryan after the game to get his reaction.
Pat Ryan, job done today against Offaly in Tullamore. What was that like looking on?
Look, I suppose look a bit disappointing. Promise from our side. Look, in fairness, Offaly, they were very well set up, very well managed, and look, you could see that they were very sharp. And look, in fairness to us, look, we were just very sloppy on the day, and it's look something for us to really go after the lads next week in preparation for Dublin.
Yeah, you're facing a team now that's on a high, and I suppose they could have treated this game like a shot to nothing. There's been very few Joe McDonagh Cup winners that have won, only one so far. Was that a different challenge today? Because there was a real buzz about them.
Yeah, there was a real buzz about them, in fairness, and look, Offaly hurling is going well, but we knew that. Look, disappointed from our side of things that we weren't, we just didn't work hard enough, how we played too much as individuals. But look, gives us something to go after the lads next week in preparation for the Dublin game.
Okay, was that the work rate that you were disappointed with? Was there a couple of interceptions as well?
Very disappointed. Yeah, look, I thought we were sloppy, didn't get enough turnovers in what we've been getting over the last couple of games we played in. But look, that's the way we look at them in the fall.
Crucially, you got goals when it mattered.
Yeah, I got a couple of great goals, and looking first to Patrick, he brought off a couple of great saves for us when it was needed, which was great for him. But look, we'll back to training on Monday night and see where we go from here.
Yeah, it's going to be a very different challenge against Dublin and Turles. A very quick turnaround to that game as well. How do you get the lads up for that one?
Look, it's fantastic from our side of things. Look, to know that we're in the All-Ireland quarter-final. Look, it wasn't looking bleak during the Munster Championship, so we're ready to go after that. Look,
you know? You've been getting bodies back. Robbie O'Flynn back on the pitch again today. The panel has been beefed out quite a bit, hasn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Look, we know we've plenty of players, but look, you know, it's trying to get them to harness the power that they have, you know, so look, we'll move forward.
Pat, well done today, and best of luck.
Thank you. Cheers.
Let's hear from the Offaly camp as well. Boss Johnny Kelly shared his thoughts on the game with Tommy Rooney, and you'll also hear from Offaly's Brian Dignan.
Johnny Kelly, hard luck today. Yeah. A 9-point defeat in the end. Is there a big difference, because it feels like, between a 15-point defeat and a 9-point defeat?
Obviously, the last goal of Cork, we thought we were in control of that situation, and they just broke down the field here and put the ball away and make it 4 goals for Cork. But on the flip side, like, we had 4 different goal chances that we didn't take. Took 3, delighted with that. Couldn't ask for any more from the fellas. But in those chances, there lies the game.
Yeah, there was a big moment just before Patrick Horgan's third goal.
Yeah.
It felt like if you got that goal, it would have made it a real, real tight finish to the game.
Absolutely, it would, like, because at that stage, like, Cork were you know, struggling to get some windows battles in the middle of field. We'd taken over in our half-back line, and we were very happy with the way we were setting up. Just weren't taking enough of chances. But that's not a slant on any player out there. Everyone absolutely gave everything they could to it. You know, and even more... Even better the performance, given that they're only 6 days since the last game. So look, it is what it is. We're happy with the performance, but disappointed that we didn't get a bit closer to Cork.
For sure. Like, look, the challenges were obvious. The quick turnaround, coming up against side against Cork. But there were so many elements of that performance that you'll have been delighted with, that you can move on from and take steps towards the progress you're looking to make.
Yeah, hopefully. Like, we look back at it. Like, I mean, we set up. We got. We got them back on Tuesday night. We had a plan for Cork, and we sort of fine-tuned it last night. The guys carried it out. Not all of it worked. Some of it did. Like, we lost a lot of our breaks and poke-outs in the first half. Seemed to get a bit better in the second half. But overall, it's a quick turnaround. And I suppose when the dust settles on this, we'd be happy enough with the performance anyway.
What had you targeted that worked?
So our own puck outs, like, I mean, if we didn't control our own puck outs and stop Cork breaking back up the field, no better team to run at you from 100 metres and, you know, get off a couple of passes and absolutely cut you open, which they did. But overall, I think we managed that aspect of the game, not completely all the time, but, like, for enough of time, like, to give us enough of chances ourselves. We got 3-19. To be honest about it, if we had to take maybe a couple more of those goal chances, that could have been 5-22, 5-23. And as I said, there was one decision, actually, like, that I still can't get over. Like, Charlie Mitchell was under the stand, pushed, it was a close stonewall free, didn't give and went back up the field, and they get a goal out of it. Like, and when you're a county like Offaly, I know it happens, but we're not whinging about it. But Lord, if that was to go the other way, that's a 4-point swing. So look, all them small things, but look, the referee had a really good game as well, and we're happy with the year.
Yeah, it's been a whirlwind couple of weeks. But as I said, there's a platform there. And you spoke last week about the importance of that Joe McDonagh Cup win for the likes of the lads that have been battling for years and years for Offaly Hurling. Again, today is another step in the right direction.
It's a step in the right direction, and that's exactly what it is. A step in the right direction, because we need to hold strong now in Leinster, and that's priority number one. I know it's 6 months away, Division 1B league coming up in February. But look, before all of that, we have to sit down with the county board and see what their plans are and see what our plans are, and, you know, trash that out. So that's the next phase.
Yeah, everyone talks about what's needed to bridge the gap. Like, what's more than S&C? Like, what else is there that can be done to make that step up?
We need more players. You know, we need some of those young fellas to come through, strengthen up. They're really good players. They've given us great energy. We need some of the older players to stay with it. They're not that old, actually. It's quite a young team. We have one or two guys around the 28, 29 mark. But overall, just similar work again. Like, and you know, we're not foolish enough to think that we're at the levels of fitness that's required for Tier 1 hurling yet. But steadily and surely we'll get there.
Yeah, some of the under 20 players that were on the panel last week weren't there this week. Is it true that there was a holiday booked and there was a kind of long-term approach taken to let them go in?
Yeah, there was, but unfortunately for those guys, like, that was booked way before they were even on the senior panel, and they actually did want to change their plans, but as such was the nature of the accommodation, they couldn't. They had given everything to Offaly, so they took their break, and we were happy to let them do so. Having said that, we all did try to see could we change things around. It didn't happen, but having said that, look, we had 26 great guys there from Offaly today, and, you know, they really give us everything today, so we're happy with that.
Yeah, as I mentioned, whirlwind a few weeks. What's the next couple of weeks and months like? Step back, take a bit of a break?
Oh, absolutely, yeah, but it won't be for too long. Like, we will, like, as I said, we'll probably talk to the county board in the next 2 or 3 weeks, and that's probably the next plan.
Thanks, Johnny. Hard luck today. I'm joined by Brian Dighton of Offaly. You're wearing a Cork jersey turned inside out. You've just fallen short today, but you put up a good challenge for a lot of that game today.
Yeah, it's positive for us. I suppose we came here last year and we got an absolute hiding off tip, so we wanted to come out and give a performance. A lot of it was to do with getting a bit of respect from people around the country, so they knew that we're not going to be a team that gets walked over the whole time, and them two goals at the end gave us a great boost. That's why we're all coming off the field happy, because we finally put up a performance against a big team that we can be proud looking back on.
Yeah, you can see that, because you were certainly in that game just before Patrick Corrigan's third goal in the 54th minute. You had a goal chance, and it would have made it really edgy in the last 10 minutes, and then Cork kind of pulled away after that. But those last two goals, we had a chance of Uvalia coming from around the crowd. It is important. Tell us about that bit of respect that you're looking for.
Again, like, the crowd in the 20s pulled, and a lot of time we were going to matches looking at, and we were playing Division 1 League here around the year, and you're looking at a couple of hundred people, and we were going, what do people think of us? And that's no disrespect to the Offaly crowd, because they're great supporters. we said, if we really give them something now, they'll follow us next year. And then when the new folly started coming, we nearly felt like we were the under-20s. We felt like we were the big dogs for once. It was unbelievable.
Yeah, it's amazing. That kind of run, that buzz over the last couple of weeks. You boys obviously getting it done then in the Joe McDonagh Cup final. What were those few days like? Because I know it's been such a quick turnaround.
It's special, I suppose. When you're coming from Offaly and you're not used to winning, and we don't really have a history of winning, all of us grew up sure why it was the worst time. And then all of a sudden, you're winning matches and you're winning matches and you're on a buzz and training's unbelievable and all the young lads are coming in and they're hopping and it just makes everything so much more enjoyable. Yeah. If you're losing, it's not as fun, like.
Of course not. Brendan Maher giving you a wee shout there from the dressing room. What's he added to the Offaly backroom team?
I suppose just serious, like, you know, a know-how about what it takes to play at the top level. Like, when he talks, everyone listens. Even Johnny's quiet for once. So Brendan talks and he tells us about, like, what happened when he was playing and what's going to happen today, and everything he says is right. It's unbelievable. He's a genius.
You must have celebrated after the Leashman.
Celebrated a bit, yeah.
Yeah. It didn't affect you today. Like, you put in a superb performance.
We went training on Tuesday and said Brian Roche, the S&C, got out of us. He seriously pushed us on Tuesday. There's a few boys coming off sore then, but we was for the better. We needed to get out of the system. So.
Yeah, but that's good to hear, though, that you actually got to appreciate something as big as winning the Joe McDonagh Cup, because that was important.
Yeah, well, our goal at the start of the year was play Division 1 hurling and win the Joe Mac. So when the Joe Mac was over, we'd achieved our goals. We were going into bonus territory and we were just going to go out and give it everything. So whether we gave a good performance for 50 minutes or 60 minutes, once we showed up, we were happy. And thank God it actually worked for 74 minutes. We actually played well. So
exactly. It's so tight after a full-time year. I'm going to ask you a long-term question. How can you make the most of the buzz you've had over the last couple of weeks, the work that's going in underage? You're only 23. There's a really good core here in Offaly. What can you do now over the winter to step on again?
I suppose we need everyone. So I think I said it after the Joe Mac, that everyone that's in the privileged position to be good enough to play for Offaly has to play for Offaly. So it's very easy for lads to step away and go travelling, and again, there's no problem with that because you have to live your life. But if you're in a position to play for Offaly, we need you. We need these young lads coming through. They need to hit the gym. They're all phenomenal athletes, but I suppose it's getting that power into them. You see today, like, the power of the Cork boys, that's really the difference. We can hurl, we can run, but when you take a hit off them, you notice the difference. So I suppose long term, it's just about working in the gym and all of us putting on the size and the power that you need for Division 1 hurling in the long term.
Well, Brian Dygan, best of luck with that. Best of luck with the off season. Looking forward to seeing Offaly back next year. It's been great to see us back.
Thanks very much. Hopefully we'll give it a good lash next year as well. Cheers.
We're going to switch focus to rugby, because both Irish provinces who took part in the URC semi-finals yesterday were unfortunately defeated by their respective opponents. Leinster losing away in South Africa to the Bulls and Munster being beaten at home by a highly attritional Glasgow Warriors side. Munster legend Alan Quinnan joined me earlier to give his thoughts on that Munster loss. I'm joined now on the line by Alan Quinlan to discuss Munster's URC semi-final loss against Glasgow Warriors in Thomond Park last night. Alan, watching the game, it seemed like Munster were very out of sorts and playing more like the team they were before that very successful trip to South Africa. What did you make of their performance overall?
Yeah, disappointing, Sarah. I think I'm sure they'll be very frustrated themselves because they made a lot of mistakes and errors in the game, and just looked like they ran out of steam. Mm. Credit to Glasgow, they were very good and they made it very difficult for Munster to try and play, and they put a lot of pressure on them. But I don't think that didn't surprise me. And I'm sure it didn't surprise the Munster team or coaching team with their approach. You know, they had to go and try and, you know, obviously be really physical with Munster and make it into a real dogfight. And they did that, and they stood up to Munster, and Munster struggled to kind of, you know, those pressure moments they had in the first half, just not to be able to get scores. They started the game really brightly, Munster, but Glasgow are a very good side, and they played really, really well, and they negated Munster and put them under a lot of pressure at the breakdown and got some crucial turnovers. So and then I suppose they scored two tries that Munster would be really disappointed with. The first one, a loose pass in midfield, and Kyle Steyn capitalised, and Glasgow score a soft try, and it's 7 points. And in a tight game, you think there's probably only going to be a score in it at the end either way, and that's the way it proved. And then the second try was from a dropout from Munster, and they got a little bit compressed in defence, and Glasgow exploited that, and they have a lot of pace in the back three. So you could say that the 14 points that Glasgow scored, I know they had a couple of kickable penalties possibly at the end, that they didn't go for, but certainly the 14 points would disappoint Munster. But I think if you look at the, you know, look back at the performance, it had a lot of mistakes in it, mm-hmm. and maybe a bit of frustration, and they were disjointed. So your point about before this fantastic run that they've gone on, that was probably, we saw some of that type of stuff creep back into the performance yesterday. But it's very hard to be critical of Munster. They've gone on this incredible run, and they've just come up short a little bit against a side full of internationals, and I think they'll be really frustrated. They just looked like they were a little bit fatigued in that second half and just couldn't get any sort of territory. So lots of small things in the game, Sarah, that went wrong for Munster, but overall, collectively, I think they weren't at their best. Some good individual performances, but collectively they weren't at their best and they got punished.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned the term dogfight. I think that's a great way to describe it. I think particularly early on it was very messy and it looked like it was going to be a bit of a scrap, but I suppose as time wore on, Glasgow started to solidify, whereas Munster continued to struggle with things like handling errors, the line out, missed tackles, not to single Jack Crowley out because he's been fantastic, but his kicking out of hand was kind of uncharacteristic as well. What do you think that was? Do you think it was fatigue at this stage in the season, or do you think there's kind of other issues that are happening underlying those
possibly
things?
I think the other issues that you have to talk about is the pressure Glasgow put them under, particularly in that their back row of Fagerson, Rory Dyers and Dempsey, they were just in their face all the time. They made it really difficult at the breakdown for Craig Casey. And in turn then the halfbacks, you know, your out half is going to be under a lot of pressure as well. Tupolato was running at Jack Crowley a lot, so they obviously had that part of their game plan, stop Munster's flow and cohesion, and their attack has been one of their strengths in this the unbeaten run they were on. So I think it's down to maybe a little bit of mental fatigue as well, and when that pressure keeps happening and possibly a little bit of frustration. I think we're talking about mistakes, uncharacteristic errors, players knocking the ball on, passes not sticking, and in a game that there's always going to be tight margins, I think that was crucial, because you know, if Munster are the ones that get two fortunate tries, I think, you know, they don't even have to play that well then. They just need to defend and be the ones that are frustrating Glasgow. So Glasgow didn't really have to overextend themselves. And look, to be honest, Munster were superb defensively, other than those kind of mistakes, because they really manned up and they put pressure on Glasgow's attack, which can be very effective. You know, Tupolato and Hugh Jones in the centre are outstanding players. They're the starting centres for Scotland. Kyle Steyn, Cancellieri on the wing. You know, there's a lot of pace there, and Munster by and large negated that. It was just those two crucial moments where, you know, Glasgow punished them with the tries, and it was telling in the end, because there's only 4 points in the game at the end of it. And I think the second try was the real killer blow, really, because, you know, at 7-3, you think Munster, if they score next, if they get their noses in front, it doesn't have to be this perfect performance. And the crowd went a little bit quieter. I think people were in shock with that second try. And look, you know, the atmosphere was amazing yesterday, and the crowd played a huge part in trying to lift the team as well. But it was just one of those days when the small moments, the mistakes, passes not going to hand, it was just a culmination of those errors which really cost Munster, and they couldn't get their attack going. You know, and it's been brilliant for the last 10 games. So, unfortunately, to answer your question, it's probably a little bit of obviously pressure from Glasgow, and maybe a little bit of frustration and mental fatigue as well.
Yeah, you mentioned Craig Casey there, and he seemed to be left unprotected a lot of the time at the breakdown, which is obviously, as you mentioned, that's slowing down the speed of the ball and the quality of the possession that Munster are getting. Do you think that's something that Munster need to look at more closely, or maybe did they not expect that level of aggression from Glasgow? Because you'd have to think that they did.
Yeah, I think they would have. Of course they would have expected a really physical game. I think sometimes it goes for you where you're the aggressors and you're the one putting pressure on the opposition halfbacks, and Glasgow just got a little bit of edge there. And I think what was more significant was the turnovers. couple of really crucial ones, particularly one in the first half when Munster were on the attack. They looked like they got over the gain line and Rory Dyer stole the ball. Another one the second half when Munster were putting on pressure again and he stole another one. He's an outstanding open side.
Yeah.
So look, the breakdown was just messy, and I think there was bodies piling in there everywhere. Could there have penalties have gone either way? Most probably. I think there was a few things missed for both sides by the referee, which is difficult. It's a real confrontational game. And Craig Casey's big strength is that speed of pass, you know, and at times he was just getting caught. But that's down to Glasgow, really. I think just they were so determined and so up for this, and they seemed to just have more spring in their step to put that pressure on Munster. But I think if you look back at the game, when they analyse the game, yes, they will look and see that maybe they should have sent an extra body in there at times. Maybe they should have been stronger in their body positions, more accurate, protecting the ball. And in turn, if you're protecting the ball, you're protecting the scrum half. But it was a real game plan for Glasgow to try and put that pressure on the two Munster halfbacks. And they did that by and large very successfully.
For sure. So it's going to be Bulls now versus Glasgow in the final. What are your thoughts on that matchup? Do you think now that Leinster and Bulls was very close yesterday as well, I think Bulls will be as buoyed by that result as Glasgow will be by their win yesterday. Who do you fancy for that final?
I think I was actually thinking about this today. It's a tough task for Glasgow to, you know, travel to South Africa, yeah, play at altitude, and the travel does take it out of you a little bit. But there's a perfect example of what Munster did last year when they went to Glasgow, won away from home, went to Dublin, albeit, you know, it's much closer and easier to get there for them, and won away from home, and then went into a real cauldron in that final in the Stormer Stadium in Cape Town. And, you know, there's probably 2,000 Munster fans there, yeah, 50,000 Stormers fans, and Munster produced an incredible performance. So I'm sure they may look at that and they may think, well, if Munster could have done it last year, why can't we do it? Mm. They played in April, Glasgow, played in Pretoria, in Loftus-Versfeld, the stadium there, and they put in a really good performance. They lost by 5 points and got a losing bonus point. So they've got a draw and all that kind of stuff. But it is difficult. You'd have to fancy the Bulls. I think their performance against Leinster was up a couple of notches from the week before, when they kind of struggle a little bit at times against Benetton in the quarterfinals. But they seem to be at a very, very high emotional pitch yesterday against Leinster. And yeah, they put in a brilliant performance. And the intensity and the aggression that they brought made it really difficult for Leinster at times. But it was a very close game. It was a brilliant game. So you'd have to think it's tough for Glasgow with the travel and going to South Africa away from home. But they're a very dangerous side and they'll take a lot of confidence from going to Thomond Park and winning there. And, you know, again, there'll be a little bit less pressure on them. But they have to probably bring the same aggression and physicality, if not more, next week. And it should be a great final. Two great teams. But you'd have to fancy the Bulls being at home.
Brilliant. We've got a Bulls prediction. So thanks so much, Alan, for joining us here on the Big Red Bench.
My pleasure, Sarah.
I'm going to chat Formula One for a few minutes, even though we don't have a Grand Prix this weekend. The F1 news mill churns regardless. It's pretty much 24/7. And there has been an interesting piece of news this week regarding that available seat at Mercedes, which Lewis Hamilton is due to depart at the end of this season. The door seems to have been shut on the possibility of Carlos Sainz taking that seat, and the initial traction that appeared to have been there between Toto Wolff and Max Verstappen looks to have fizzled out as well. However, there's one name which has stayed in the mix since the very beginning, and that is young Formula 2 driver Kimi Antonelli. Now, Toto Wolff said during the Canadian Grand Prix that he wanted to concentrate on Antonelli as the Mercedes team plans to reinvent itself. There were a couple of pretty significant blockers, though, in Antonelli's path to the Mercedes seat, including the fact that the FIA's International Sporting Code previously stated that drivers must be at least 18 and hold a valid driving licence in order to race in F1. Now, that might sound fairly basic, but this rule was actually only introduced after Max Verstappen's entry into F1 when he was just 17 at the time. Antonelli doesn't turn 18 until August 25th, meaning that he wouldn't even be able to run a free practice session until after that in an F1 car. In addition, the minimum age for holding a driving license in Italy, which is where Antonelli is from, is also 18 years of age. However, the FIA clause that was in place has been quietly deleted as of this week. A new clause now says that at the sole discretion of the FIA, a driver judged to have a recently and consistently demonstrated outstanding ability and maturity in a single-seater Formula car competition may be granted a super license at the age of 17 years old. That's a direct quote. So in other words, the door is being left ajar to introduce Kimi Antonelli into the Formula One paddock. Obviously, we can't state with any certainty that the clause was edited specifically for him, but the timing is notable. And there is the possibility that Antonelli would spend some time at Williams rather than jumping straight into the Mercedes seat next to George Russell, which would be a huge challenge and a gigantic step up from Formula 2. Because it has to be said that he's not exactly setting the world alight in Formula 2. He's currently sitting P6 in the driver's standings and has a handful of fourth place finishes to refer to as far as his best results so far this season. But the people behind the scenes are saying that his talent is extremely promising, so we will have to wait and see whether he makes an appearance during a free practice session in 2024. But I would note, going back to that quote from the new clause that is in those FIA rules, consistently demonstrated outstanding ability and maturity. That is very subjective and quite vague. So how are they going to define consistently demonstrating outstanding ability and maturity? And does what Antonelli is currently doing in F2 stack up to that? We will have to wait and see. Although silly season for the driver's market now seems to be pretty much a constant item of discussion, regardless of the time of year, we are now in the sort of regular time frame of some significant decisions being made over the next month or two as racing returns to Europe. The next Grand Prix is coming up on Sunday 23rd of June. That's from Spain, and it's part of a triple header where Spain will be followed by Austria and then the British GP at Silverstone. I'm curious, what do you make of this Kimi Antonelli news? These changes, are they for him? Can he match the criteria, or will the FIA simply make it so, if that's what's wanted by the powers that be? Let me know. We are at Big Red Bench on X. I'd be very curious to hear your thoughts. You are very welcome back to the Big Red Bench with Bord Gáis Energy, proud sponsors of the GAA Hurling All-Ireland Senior Championship. It is Sarah McKenzie Foley here with you for another half hour or so. Let's get you a score update from the second Euros game of the day. It's Slovenia against Denmark, and it is still Denmark who lead 1-0 thanks to that first half goal from Christian Eriksen. They are just about approaching 75 minutes played and the substitutions are starting to flood in, so there's sure to be more action to come from that game, and I'll get you a final score before the end of the show as well, hopefully. But in the meantime, we are circling back to Gaelic games now. Obviously Cork had their action-packed day yesterday, but there has been more action today, so I'm going to bring you on a whistle-stop tour of the results. Dublin and Mayo, first up, couldn't be separated as the All-Ireland Football Championship group stages came to an end today. Cormac Costello fisted over a late equalising point to leave it level at 17 points each in Roscommon today, and that result means that Dublin will go straight into the quarterfinals with Mayo heading for tomorrow's preliminary draw. Elsewhere, Armagh needed a late last minute point, I should say, to rescue a draw with Galway and send themselves into the quarterfinals. The 15-1-12 draw means that Galway will head into the preliminaries next weekend. Here's Armagh's Stephen Campbell speaking to Jonathan Higgins after that game.
Stefan, I suppose there's no other words, just a magical day for your side.
Yeah, it didn't look like it was going to happen for us for long periods, but it was quite similar to the game last year in Carrick. I think, you know, we got a refresher at half time that although we knew the point was good enough, and I think when we got the goal and we backed it up another point, you know, we really started to believe. We pressed up, got the double score, maybe another score after that, and you know, albeit I got the equaliser, we proved once again, you know, how deep the squad is, and I believe that if it wasn't me, you know, getting them behind the defence there at the end, it would have been somebody else, you know. So just thankful that I went over. I could maybe clip the post at the top of the crossbar there and went over, but yeah, just thankful that, you know, we get the week off now and we back in the training camp, and you know whoever comes out the other side, you know, it's going to be an even keel regardless, you know.
How big was that though? Because it felt like Galway had pushed on. I think there were five up, they were motoring, they probably left a couple of chances behind. Did you guys still believe? Because look, you've got a lot of flack, I suppose, outside the county for not getting over the line in big games, but today you rolled up the sleeves and got the important score.
Yeah, I think we've showed, especially over the last 18 months, that, you know, we're hard to beat. And there is an argument out there that we give a couple of big scores away and the down moment of games and maybe not close them out. But like, if you go back to the down game, you know, in the semi-final, the pressure was on, big favourites out there, and we showed the composure to work the score to get over the line. And, you know, we thought we played quite well in passes against Donegal, and that continued into the group, you know. So, yeah, the belief's there. We're a hard team to beat, and just hopefully we go back. I'd say that we'll be tucked down a peg or two this week because the first half wasn't good enough, and let's hope we can put on a show maybe for 70 minutes, you know, next time out.
I was about to call it, how good did the winner feel? It was an equaliser, but a massive, massive score.
Yeah, I did reference there in a previous interview that although we knew, you know, we got a refresh at half time that the point was good enough, and just with a goal, we were five down and we scrambled hard. We could have went five or six, maybe seven down at certain stages. Shane had a chance on the sideline and they tried to keep ball, and you know, we got the turnover here, and you know, we worked it hard. We felt that there was a lot of space down on that left hand side of the field, and it was just following into that second and third phase, and you know, if it wasn't me, it'd been somebody else, you know.
This feels like it's more than just a week off. It could be a statement result for your side.
We love getting a week off.
I mean, in terms of matches, of course, Kieran will probably give you a good running, but
yeah, we'll get to watch a bit of football next week. But you know, as I say, we'll be levelled out during the week here. The first half wouldn't have been good enough. We could have been four or five up, you know, even before Galway got in out of their half, and you know, we were kicking ourselves at half time. But look, we showed a bit of mettle there just at the end, a bit of composure. We became a bit more clinical in the down moments, and you know, yeah, we'll take the week off, as you call it.
Train week, whatever you want to call it. But just lastly, it's still scatter supporters still around, massive noise at the end. I was here earlier, all I could see was Armagh colours are around the place. It's surreal. It's what the championship and what Armagh football is all about.
Yeah, look, they've been on the road with us for a while now, especially from we've come up to the divisions, you know, through 3 and 2 and back up to 1. We very rarely get less than 10,000 to 12,000 in a game now in Armagh, and like, I think that speaks volume. Was we were down in Cork for the Dead Rubber. I know obviously they had a pre-booked these things, but you know, to go down to Cork and outnumber the home support down there, you know, it, as I say, it speaks volumes, and let's hope it continues.
Thanks, Stefan. Enjoy the train. Well,
thank you. Well,
elsewhere, Kerry strolled to top their group with a 221-110 win over Louth, and Stephen Doyle has the full-time report from that match.
Kerry, 2 goals and 21 points. Louth, 1 goal and 10 points, the full-time score in sunny Portlaoise. In the end, the men from the Kingdom showed their dominance on the scoreboard with a 14-point win, but Louth showed once again why they are a team to be feared in the preliminary round. The wee county men looked impressive on the counter-attack throughout the first half and found the net off the back of one of several high balls into the Kerry back line. In the 7th minute, corner back Donald McKenney stuck out a boot in a goal mouth scramble to stab it home from close range. They did have other chances, but it was Kerry who were far more economical with their shooting. David Clifford scoring 3 frees and a point in that first half, while there was 2 each from Paddy Clifford and Brian O'Pioglaic. That helped them to a 13-1 lead at the break. They outscored Louth 4-2 at the start of the second half before Jason Foley scored Kerry's first goal in the 46th minute to give his side a 10-point lead. Louth played some good football, but they could only chip away at Kerry's big lead. Sam Mulroy, their top scorer, on 3 points. Tadhg Morley popped up with a late goal for Kerry in the 62nd minute to make it 219-110. O'Pioglaic was excellent and scored his 3rd point late on, while David Clifford finished with 7 thanks to a late free, his 5th place kick of the day. Louth won't get home advantage, as the 14-point defeat along with Monaghan's 4-point win against Meath means Ger Brennan's men will be away from home for their preliminary round match. That draw tomorrow, Kerry can get set for a quarter final. The final score in Portlaoise, Kerry 221, Louth 110.
Yeah, and as Stephen mentioned there, Monaghan go through in third place after a 117-114 victory over Meath, who end bottom of that group. But there's more. Laois are the last team to book themselves into the Tailteann Cup semi-finals. They got the better of Kildare 2-11 to 12 points in Tullamore to take on Antrim in the last four. The other pairing will see Down and Sligo meet for a place in the decider, and Kildare boss Glen Ryan actually announced his departure from his role following that loss today. We're going to talk boxing now. And Cork's Callum Walsh improved his record to 11-0 with 9 knockouts last week. The Cove man stopped Carlos Ortiz Cervantes in brutal fashion with a second round knockout. And Callum, as Callum has spoken about here on the Big Red Bench before, he's targeting a fight here in Ireland next up. And there have now been some developments. There's been some posts on X from both Callum and UFC boss Dana White saying that Walsh's next fight will indeed be in Ireland, but we don't yet have the details, so watch this space. In the meantime though, while he was back home in Cork, Callum spoke to Rory about that homecoming fight, how he prepared for his most recent win, and lots more.
Delighted to be joined on the line now by Callum Walsh, who moved to 11-0 recently. You can watch Callum Walsh's recent fights in UFC Fight Pass, the home to world-class combat promotion, giving fans access to thousands of hours of content and live events worldwide. Callum, it's good to have you back on the show. How are you, sir?
Yeah, very good. Yeah, good to be back.
Yeah, the fact that we're speaking at 9:30 in the morning, does that suggest you're back at home?
Yeah, I'm in Crosshaven. Yeah, I'm looking over there now at Cove. Well, I'm trying. I can't see anything because of the rain, but...
You brought the weather back from the States, and you're sound for that.
And it was grand the last few days. I was here. I've been here since Sunday, and I was thinking every morning I was waking up and I was looking out the window. I was saying, "That's the job." No, it's sunny, sunny. And I was lying in bed this morning, and I heard the rain, and I thought, "Oh my god,
the joys of it, boy, the joys of it." Oh, what's it like being back at home, having those home comforts again? I suppose.
Yeah, it's the job. You know, I love coming home. It's only a short trip this time. I'm going back in Tuesday, but still though, it's nice. It's nice to be back now and eat my nan's dinner, you know.
What did a nan have cooking for you?
Roast beef, yeah, roast beef dinner.
That's exactly what you want after a fight, but I'd imagine everyone's delighted to see you. Have you managed to get home much in your run over the last couple of years?
I come home every now and again. You know, the last time I would have been home now would be December, and now and hopefully I'll be coming home again soon for a fight.
Yeah, that's the big thing. Yeah, I mean, like, we'll talk about that in a second, but look, you're 11-0 now at 9 KOs after last week's big win over Carlos Ortiz. First off, Freddie Roach said that was the best he had seen you perform. Do you feel like it was your best performance?
Yeah, I think it was. Yeah, I think it was my career best performance. You know, considering the opponent and everything I was fighting, you know, I was fighting a fella that had 100% knockout ratio. You know, he had 14 wins with 14 knockouts. It was a very dangerous opponent. And I put in a lot of work, you know, for the camp. You know, I put in extra work. I trained very hard. You know, I wanted this to be a very good performance. You know, I wanted this to go right. I wanted everything that could have went... Everything that happened, I wanted to happen. You know, I needed that boost. I needed to just get that performance to push even harder for the homecoming fight. You know, and it all went to plan, and I was very happy with it. Yeah.
Yeah, because Mike, he was a tricky enough customer. He won his last three fights on the road. He's a tough Mexican. Mexicans are always very, very tough. So, like, to put him away in the manner that you did, it certainly, I suppose, put that kind of the exclamation point on the fact that you want to fight at home. You're saying, look, this is what I can do.
Yeah, definitely. I feel like I had to just show them I'm levels above these fellas too, you know. It was like if I wasn't going to be what I think I can be, you know, he would have exposed me, you know. He would have maybe made it a lot harder for me, you know. So I had to just go out there and show, like, that I'm a lot better than these fellas, you know. Even like he beat an 11-0 prospect there two fights ago, you know what I mean? So I had to show them, like, I'm not like any of these other prospects, you know. I'm a lot better. I've been around a lot longer. I've fought my whole life, and I feel like that's what I did, you know. I went out and I just made a statement.
Yeah, round two, KO. Talk us through the finish. It was some lovely work from yourself to set it up first off.
Yeah, you know, it was actually what we worked on for the whole camp. You know, I knew he was going to try to throw his overhand left, and I knew he would try to land on that one lucky shot, and I knew if I just kept my punches straight, you know, I went straight through the middle, and I'd catch him when he opened up, and that's exactly what happened.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. I mean, like, a fantastic win for yourself, as you say. I mean, like, 11-0 now, 9 KOs. Do you think people in the boxing world are really starting to sit up and take notice now of, like, what you can do in the ring?
Yeah, they should, you know, definitely, because, like I said, he was a tough opponent, you know, and he's made people look bad, you know, and he's knocked out people that people gave him no chance, and he's knocked people out, you know, so... The way I finished him, I think people now are thinking, right, he is the real deal, you know, because if he wasn't, that fella would have been able to show it, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, like, we've talked a lot over the last couple of years, Callum, and there's always been talk of fighting at home and fighting in Ireland, fighting in Cork. It would be fantastic about fighting in Ireland at the very least. Like, Dana White is basically saying that, yeah, this is going to happen now. Massively exciting for yourself, but I mean, like, fighting in front of an Irish crowd, just how special would that be as a professional?
Yeah, it's what I want, you know, it's what I've wanted for a long time, you know what I mean? It's but I think now is the perfect time, you know, that it did make sense, right, to have that fight, you know, especially the way it went now and how much of a boost my career is after getting since that fight, you know. So I think they have the perfect plan, you know, they know what they're doing, you know. I was trying to maybe rush it, you know, and say, oh, I want to go home. But obviously there's no better promoter now than Dana White and Tom Loughery. You know, they know what they're doing and they have the plan. And next fight is going to be home. From what Dana said in it, next fight is going to be back here. I don't know whether it's going to be Cork, Dublin. I don't know where it's going to be, even when it's going to be. I don't have any information. They're probably organising it right now. Like, as I'm here, they're probably over, you know, looking into it and organising it. I remember they even have it already and they didn't want to tell me, you know, they wanted to maybe see how that fight went. But
yeah,
definitely once I get back to LA, I'm going to be asking questions and hopefully we can announce it soon.
Yeah, and as you mentioned, like, Tom Loughery, one of the greatest promoters the game has ever seen. So, I mean, like, is it just a case of you have to trust him and just, like, listen to him and, like, he's going to say, do exactly what's right for your career?
Oh yeah, I trust them 100%. You know, I let them. I don't even ask like who I'm fighting or where I'm fighting. I just say just tell me when and I'll be there. You know, that's how much I trust them. You know, I know that they're doing right for my career and I think he's realised now that it's time to bring it home.
Yeah, it certainly is. We look forward to seeing you fight. I mean, like, as you say, like, Dublin might be a possibility. Cork would be amazing to fight in Cork in front of your hometown fans. I mean, like, even just thinking off the top of my head here now, Live at the Marquee is happening down at the Marina. That'd be a perfect venue. You get 6,000-7,000 people in there to watch you perform. It'd be incredible.
Yeah, you know, I was just talking about that. Do you know how long that stays there? No.
No, it's there for the next month or so. But I mean, like, that site would be available and you could, like, get the same kind of setup that they would have and bring that in. Do you know what I mean? It'd be incredible.
Yeah, I must, you know what, I'm actually going to text Tom there now. Once we get off this, I'm going to text him and I'm going to say it to him. And, that would be, if we were going to do Cork, that would be perfect, to be fair.
Yeah, so I've given you the idea, so I'll take the credit for that if it happens.
I'm going to say it to him after and see if we can do that.
And to make it happen, like Callum Walsh in Cork next. You had a great Irish support again for your last fight, which you've had for all the fights, but have you noticed your fan base expanding now, I suppose, a lot more American fans?
Yeah, definitely. The American fans are 100% coming on board. You know, for a while there, it was like, you know, but even though just like walking around LA or I go to random places, you know, there's a lot of people recognising me. You know, it's a weird feeling. You know, I was at a roller coaster park in LA, and so there was this one roller coaster, it's like two roller coasters on either side and they go up like a very steep thing and then you go down. So where it was me and Tabitha, we're at, yeah, it's called Six Flags, the place. So we're going up on the left side saying there's another roller coaster on the right. And they're both going very slow and I was scared. You know, I was like, oh my God. And all I hear from the other side is that Callum Walsh? Is that Callum Walsh? A bunch of American young fellas. And I was like, oh, some timing, and I had to pretend I wasn't scared. On the roller coaster.
Yeah, it's funny. A guy of your I suppose ability, 11 wins and 9 knockouts, being scared of a roller coaster.
Yeah, scary though. Because you have no control, you know, in the ring. At least I have control over what's going on, you know. I can kind of control it a bit, but if you have no control there, like, you're just locked in.
Fair enough. Do you have any idea of, or do you have any opponents in mind for your homecoming bout? I mean, like, there's a lot of talk of Xander Zayas. I mean, like, I've seen his name mentioned alongside your name a lot over the last week.
That would be a New York fight, I'd say, if I was going to fight him. That would be a New York fight. Back in Ireland, sure, I don't have any say. A little bit I do, like, but I obviously have to say yes or no, but picking the opponents, no, I don't have no interest in picking opponents or whatever. Whoever they tell me, I'll just fight, I suppose, yeah.
And there'll be plenty of Cork fighters, plenty of Irish fighters as well to round out the card there. So, I mean, like, it would draw a massive house if you were to come home.
Yeah, definitely, yeah. We'd be able to put on a massive show.
Mm. Just about Xander Zayas as well. I mean, like, there has been a lot of talk of you two guys coming head to head. I think you said afterwards that you would just knock him out and that would be the end of that. Is that how confident you are?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I think I'd knock him out easily. I've seen a few fights and I wasn't really impressed, you know. And yeah, I think I would knock him out. Yeah, I think I'm very, very strong enough for the weight. And I don't think has that real knockout power, you know. So I think I would knock him out, yeah.
It'd be fantastic to see. What's the plan now for the next few days in Cork?
I don't know, to be honest. I'm looking out the window now at the rain and I don't even know what to do. I was hoping the rain, you know, we'd get away with it like for a few days, but I don't even know today. I don't even know. I'll try to get my nan to cook dinner again.
Well, Cork's in Cork Ramblers are playing at Turner's Cross tonight if you're around.
Yeah, I heard that. All right, I was going to go for sure. I don't know, could I take Tabitha out in the rain? I don't know.
Yeah, to see the glamours of League of Ireland First Division football. I mean, like, that's a big one, all right. come here, buddy. It's a pleasure as always to talk to you. Looking forward to watching your Irish fight and watching you seeing perform in person. Fingers crossed that marquee idea comes off. That'll be absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, 100%. I'm going to push for that now.
All right, brother. Really appreciate the time. Talk to you soon, all right?
Thank you. Thanks very much.
As I said earlier, watch this space. Who knows? We're gonna get that Irish fight, just TBD on where it is. I'm going to finish up this evening with some athletics because Ireland had its most successful European Championships ever in Rome over the last week or so. And Cork's own Nicola Tuttle placed ninth in her first ever Senior European Hammer Final as part of those games. And earlier on today, I had the chance to catch up with Nicola to talk to her about her experience in Rome and also what's up next for her this summer. Nicola, welcome back to the Big Red Bench. How are you feeling now that you've been back at home for a few days after the European Championships in Rome?
Good, yeah, no, it's definitely was such a nice experience, and being back home now, it's nice just to sit down and reflect on it a little, but also get straight back into training and looking forward to keeping going and for the next competition.
Yes, spoken like a true athlete. Tell me, how did you feel about your form going into the meet? Did you have kind of any goals or any expectations set ahead of time for yourself?
Yeah, I think every athlete will have expectations of themselves. And I think for me, I knew I was quite young going out there and that I would have to throw close to my PB if I wanted to be up there. And I had a slight feeling that maybe around the 70 or over the 70 might squeeze me into that final. So that was always my goal, was just to throw, like, no matter what, like, if I was close to my best, I'd be happy enough with my performance. So to be able to go out there and get close to, like, it was my second furthest throw in a competition. So to be close to my best and then get that final was just amazing.
For sure. I mean, you kind of alluded to it there. It was your first Senior European Championships and you did throw not far off the PB and you finished ninth in that final. I know athletes are always looking for more from themselves, but kind of, as you say, looking back at it now, were you happy with your performance on the day? Did you feel like you'd kind of left it all out there?
Yeah, I definitely gave it my all. I think there's always little bits that you look at and learn from, and it was just such a great experience for me, and hopefully I'll be able to learn a lot from it and bring it into other competitions.
Definitely, and you're still only 20 years old, so I'd imagine that, you know, the putting in that performance at that age, it must be a really kind of positive, encouraging sign for you that will spur you on to go even further, as, you know, it's a great start to kind of your senior career, I suppose.
Hopefully, yeah. I mean, it was definitely a nice confidence booster. I think training had been going well during the winter, so it was nice for it all to come together at the right time. And I just think even being out there, like surrounded by such amazing athletes. It was just really nice to be a part of it all and just to get to see everything and how everyone else is dealing with it. And I think even just in Ireland at the moment, like athletics is in such a good, like it's in such a good place. There's so many strong athletes out there, and even the juveniles coming up, there's just so many, and it's just so good to see.
I was going to ask you about that next, because obviously it's, I mean, it was Ireland's most successful European senior championships ever. What was the feeling like amongst the camp? Because athletics can be often a very, I suppose, solo sport, a very kind of isolating sport, but there must have been a huge amount of excitement amongst the Ireland team as a whole when you were over there.
Definitely, yeah, no, it was so nice. Like everyone was backing each other, and even around the hotel, if you were competing that day, like when you'd be going down for meals and stuff, everyone would be looking at the results and watching the live streams and cheering everyone on. And then I suppose having the two golds and the two silvers by the end of it was just topped it off. Like I think the gold at start set everyone off in such a good mood, and everyone just wanted to do their best. And we were like, we just had such a strong team out there, and it was just amazing to see.
For sure. I can imagine you were feeding off that energy as well. It's always good to have that extra boost of everyone around you. I know you've been straight back to training this week, as you mentioned earlier on. What's the plan for the rest of the summer for you? What's up next on your agenda?
I'm going away next week again now for a few competitions abroad, and then after that I'll be back home for nationals. So hopefully I can put in a few more strong performances.
Amazing. Well, Nicola, we won't take up too much of your time. I think you've got some well-deserved balance of rest at home and, as you said, getting straight back on it as well. But thanks again so much for joining me here on the Big Red Bench, and a huge congrats on Rome, and very best of luck for the rest of the season.
Thank you very much for having me.
Well, 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 it has finished 1-1 between Slovenia and Denmark. An absolute screamer of an equaliser put Slovenia back on a level with Denmark. Approaching 80 minutes, came off the back of a corner, really was an absolute thumper, and Schmeichel was pretty much powerless to do anything about it. That really kind of opens up that group. Obviously we've got that England game coming up against Serbia later this evening. They're going to be kicking off at 8 p.m. but that is all I've got time for this evening, folks. Thank you as always for tuning in. It has been Sarah McKenzie Foley here with you for the Sunday edition of the Big Red Bench with Bord Gáis Energy, proud sponsors of the All-Ireland Senior Hurling Championship. If you missed anything or you want to listen back to any part of the show, the podcast will be available shortly after I'm offline this evening. But in the meantime, I hope you have a lovely rest of your Sunday, and make sure you stay tuned for Green on Red with Mags Blackburn up next.